Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. As we end the year of 2021 and also the fifth year of Gospel Tangents, I wanted to look back at some of the influential Mormon historians and people in the Mormon community that we've lost. So over this next episode, we're going to talk about five main people. We'll start with Armand Moss, Michael Quinn, his brother, Will Bagley, Shannon Flynn, and Kurt Bench. So these are some pillars in the Mormon historians community. And, you know, we've been talking with the late Dr. John Pratt. I thought it would only be appropriate to talk about some of the other people that we've lost this year. So I'd like to start with Armand Moss. Unfortunately, Armand never actually appeared on Gospel Tangents, but he did write a chapter in Newell Bringhurst and Matt Harris's book. And so, Matt, I'm going to introduce Matt and Newell to talk about Armand here in just a moment. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about Armand. I'm pulling this mostly from Wikipedia because it's a nice, quick, easy source. But just to tell you a little bit about Armand. Armand Lind Moss was born June 5th, 1928 in Salt Lake City, Utah. He was a lifelong member of the church and served a full-time mission for the church in New England. In 1949, he accompanied his family to Japan, where his father was called to preside over missionary work of the LDS Church in East Asia. While in Japan, he was also inducted into the U.S. Air Force, serving 4 years in military intelligence. In 1950, he met Ruth Hathaway, and they married in 1951. In 1954, Moss graduated from Sophia University in Tokyo, a distinguished Jesuit institution with a BA in Asian Studies and History. He and his wife are the parents of 6 sons and 2 daughters. Moss joined the faculty at Utah State University for 2 years. In 1970, he earned a PhD in Sociology with a dissertation titled Mormonism and Minorities at the University of California at Berkeley. He moved on to sociology faculty at Washington State University, where he taught for 3 decades, starting in 1969 and formally retiring in 1999. Moss specialized in the sociology of religion. In 2013, Claremont Graduate University honored him as one of the most prominent Mormon intellectuals of the late 20th and early 21st centuries. He received 3 different awards from the Mormon History Association for his books and other works, and 2 awards from the Dialogue Foundation for his articles in Dialogue. Moss served 20 years on its editorial and advisory boards, and then 10 years as either chairman or a member of the Dialogue Foundation's board of directors. Moss was president of the Mormon History Association from 1997 to 1998. I just wanted to include some of his most famous books, Neither Black Nor White, Mormon Scholars Encounter the Race Issue, that was published in 1984 by Signature Books, The Angel and the Beehive, The Mormon Struggle with Assimilation, that was published by the University of Illinois Press in 1994, All Abraham's Children, Changing Conceptions of Race and Lineage, that was also published by University of Illinois Press in April of 2003, and Shifting Borders and a Tattered Passport, Intellectual Journeys of a Mormon Academic, which was published by University of Utah Press. Armand passed away on August 1st, 2020. As I mentioned, he wrote a chapter in Newell Bringhurst and Matt Harris's book on the Gospel Topics series that was actually published after his death here in 2021. Kind of why I wanted to include him in here. And so I just wanted to let Matt and Newell share their thoughts and memories of Moss, or of Armand Moss here. So I'll turn it over to them. I would like to talk a little bit about Armand Moss, who just recently passed away. Can you guys share a little bit about what Armand said to kind of close up the book?
I thought that that essay is really one of the critical essays. If I was going to recommend the way you read the book, I would recommend reading the introduction that Matt and I wrote, and then going to read what Armand Moss had to say in his concluding essay, because what that does is it really does two critical things. It kind of summarizes the gist of what's in most of the essays, so that if you read that second, you'd be able to go back and read each of the subsequent essays themselves. And he does really a good job of summarizing the gist of what each of the authors mean and how they approached it. And so I think that's one of the great contributions of his essay. But I thought one of the most profound things that Armin had to say in his essay, and I'm trying to look through my notes because I thought it was so kind of profound that it stood out at me, he talks about there's a section of his commentary where he talks about the evolution of church doctrines and categories of church doctrine. He breaks it down. I think he's written this in other contexts, but he says that when you're dealing with the issue of church doctrines and how they change, they tend to fall in four categories: canonical, which is the highest level, things that really are very strong and basic to essential Mormonism; what are called official, which is a second category; the third category being authoritative; and then the lowest category, what he calls folklore. And it's interesting because he does say that the evolution, like the black priesthood and temple restriction, kind of went through all four of these categories. I don't know if he says, it starts out as folklore and then it evolves into authoritative, when Brigham Young, issues, saying blacks can authoritative official when it's in blacks can no longer hold the priesthood. And then it almost reaches a canonical category when the church issues its official statements first in 1949, which really gives it the imprimatur of the first presidency. And it's really enforced. I mean, people who question it or try to change it are really dealt with harshly, really from that point on. Before, it doesn't have that canonical category. And so, he discusses that in this concluding essay. And then he also deals with what he calls issues of doctrinal innovation. For instance, he looks at the essay that was written on the Mother in Heaven. Initially, that was a taboo to even talk about, a Mother in Heaven. I mean, that was one of the things that got people like Margaret Toscano and others, when they did the purge in the early 90s, all those women were talking about female feminist issues, including Mother in Heaven. And there was an explicit ban at that time that you do not, that's not even brought up as an issue. But the fact that the church has issued a Mother in Heaven essay has removed that taboo and perhaps moved it in, from maybe what had been the folklore or an official category. But yet it's still kind of tricky because the church is very uncomfortable about the idea of, talking excessively and in detail about Mother in Heaven. So he talks about the idea of doctrinal innovation as reflected in some of the essays, particularly the Mother in Heaven essay. And then even in the Bloomberg essay, he makes reference to the fact that the church has kind of moved in what one, I think it was one writer named White, who talked about a neo-orthodoxy of the church, giving increased emphasis to the idea of grace, works, and the sufficiency of the atonement, which Bloomberg, discusses in his essay. And and then he also deals with the issue of ambiguity. what did Joseph Smith really mean when he wrote about women's role in the priesthood? And that was an issue that that Margaret Toscano tackles in the, and I think you'll find your interview with her quite interesting, how she'll handle that. I'm sure she'll have some really interesting things to say about what did Joseph Smith really mean when he talks about the women's role in the priesthood. And Margaret is absolutely convinced that he intended that the Relief Society would be another priesthood quorum, just as the quorum of the anointed. He claims that Margaret, claims, or and others have written that the quorum of the anointed was considered as a priesthood quorum. And that was a quorum that included both men and women. So she's effectively arguing that women held the priesthood. So, as I say, Armand has some really fascinating things to say about, the way he summarizes and encapsulations the significance of the Gospel Topics essays and what they portend for, doesn't go into too much what it maybe portends for the future of the church.
Cool. Do you have anything else, Matt, on Armand Moss and the conclusion there?
No, Noel summarized it nicely. Just I'd say one thing about Armand the person, though, is that I think that there isn't probably anybody in the church, in my opinion, who represents a honesty and truthfulness, but yet from a believing Latter-day Saint as Armand. He really has walked that balance his entire life. He's not afraid of the truth. He's not afraid to let the chips fall where they may. But as a believing, practicing Mormon, I loved his scholarship because I knew that he wasn't an apologist. I knew that he wasn't going to whitewash, race or anything else he wrote about. And he was always going to do it in a very sensitive way that I think is really what should be expected of each of us who writes on Mormon studies. And I really think he's a model of a believer, but also a scholar. And that's one of the reasons why Newell and I wanted him to participate in this volume, is because he really did have that balance. And he's going to be missed.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, he was, I consider him to have been a personal mentor to me, because he carefully critiqued and went over with me. And we had a lot of lively discussions on the issue of blacks and the priesthood, because along with Lester Bush, Armand was one of the pioneer writers on the issue of race priesthood. His first article appeared before Lester Bush's did back in the 1970s, 67. It was a dialogue article on race, folklore, and the priesthood. He talks a little bit about how it started out as folklore. That was his initial foray. And then, of course, all of Abraham's children. And then he and Lester Bush co-edited an anthology, which included one of my essays in there, that was published in the early 1980s. Neither white nor black. There it is.
Matt's right holding there. It up. I don't know if we can see it, but hopefully you
can.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, neither white nor black. And so he continued to write on the issue. And then, the fading of the Pharaoh's curse is another very seminal article where he further argues about this evolution going from folklore to doctrine, to a canonical. You have to acknowledge the fact that the black priesthood denial reached the canonical status with the 49 statement, and then it's almost like they immediately regretted it, because here comes David O. McKay saying, "Oh my gosh, I signed this statement back in 49," and they tried to downplay that that statement even existed, as Matt has shown in the stuff that he's written. I mean, it was, they give it that status, and then almost immediately when David O. McKay takes over in 51, he said, "Oh my gosh, look what we're stuck with. We're stuck with this damn albatross," you know. and I think that's what he, you know, almost at you know, David O. McKay is another complex individual. I had the opportunity to get to know the McKay family quite intimately when I was doing my biography of Fawn Brody, who of course was McKay's errant niece. So, you know, they're an interesting family, you know, kind of have some of the same complexities and contradictions that you find with Dallin Oaks.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Matt Harris and Newell Bringhurst discussing Armand Moss. So it's a great loss to the Mormon historians community that we've lost Armand, and I just wanted to remember him. In our next conversation, we're going to look back on the life of D. Michael Quinn and talk about him in our next conversation. Could the church be accused of serving God and mammon, though, with some of these businesses?
The accusation is there, but typically it comes from people who don't recognize that the church makes no distinction between God and mammon.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe for just $5 a month at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview before everybody else. If you'd like to watch the entire video for just $8 a month, you can either subscribe on YouTube, Patreon, or my website, gospeltangents.com. Just click the yellow subscribe button, and I'll add you to our Gospel Tangents Insiders group so that you can see entire videos. For those interested in a PDF transcript, you can subscribe at either Patreon or on my website. For just $10 a month, I'll send you a PDF as soon as it's complete. If you'd like a copy of the paperback as well as a PDF, just sign up for $20 a month at either Patreon or my website, gospeltangents.com. Of course, you can buy individual transcripts at amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all the things that we have there. Don't forget to support Gospel Tangents with an awesome t-shirt like one of these. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Also, you can get our Twitter updates at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got more of our great videos. Thanks again.